What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore, back with my main man, Jake Sheehy.
Yes, sir.
Our goal is always to help you walk into the short-term rental game with your eyes wide open. That's what we try to talk about on these episodes, some different things, the good, the bad, the ugly, everything in between, so that you can navigate this short-term rental world as best as possible. Today, we talk about trending topics a little bit more, like, you know, tie in some news topics into short-term rental topics. And so, what do we have today? What do we got? What do we got on the agenda?
Oh man, okay, we got one main topic, and then we may add on a little bit of a little extra on the end if we got some time here. But we're mainly talking about Florida, right? Well, let's start with this opening line. I think this is a good one. Disney and Florida Coast are packed with visitors, but between oversupply and rising costs, the question isn't is there demand? It's can you still make money? So we're going to talk about some statistics with Florida's market, some of the like five huge challenges that a lot of investors face with it, and then if we got time, we're going to dig into how Gen Z is statistically dumber than their parents' generation, and how you can get, if you have a child that's maybe Gen Z 14 to 29, how to get them involved in the business, how to give them some, you know, some entrepreneurial confidence, some business literacy, some other things that could really help them, maybe even help with your taxes. We could dive into that. But we're mainly talking about Florida today. If the market's in turmoil, what does this mean? And that kind of thing. Yeah. Should I do some stats?
So we picked Florida, obviously, probably because it's it is kind of the home base of short-term rentals, if you will.
Yeah.
We get a lot of information out of the Florida markets for kind of what's coming down the line, what we can expect. Their major markets give us some really good indications and keep our finger on the pulse of what's going on. So yeah, I like this.
Okay.
So what are we seeing?
Well, here we go. Let's do the short-term statistic, and then we can do housing inventory statistics. Okay. So this is right off the Governor Ron DeSantis' office website. He says, Florida set a new tourism record in 2025. We haven't got 2026 report yet. Welcoming 143.3 million visitors, driven by a strong domestic market, according to that office. Short-term rentals remained a robust part of this, with the demand growing roughly 7% year over year in 2025, while total 2025 expenditure data is pending, 133.6 billion in economic impact with the short-term rental market. Fantastic. So huge deal. Huge deal.
Yeah.
But now let's look at the housing inventory, right? Like, if Florida's housing market has experienced a significant surge in inventory, with over 180,000 to 260,000 homes for sale as early as 2026, marking the highest level since 2008. So huge deal. Can you kind of help us unpack this? What does this mean for the investors listening?
So you got two things. So there's two markets we're tracking, right? Mm-hmm. We're tracking the housing market because we buy single family homes, and we're tracking the demand or the short-term rental market. So one is we need these short-term, we need these homes to put on the market as short-term rentals, and then we're tracking the demand. So the first numbers you're telling is we're having record demand. We're having record visitors. Right. That's not slowing down. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing some really good demand. You know, supply in some of these markets is higher. We're talking about major markets in Florida. Mm-hmm. So we're always, since the COVID boom and then around 2022, we started, that supply caught up with demand, right? So we've got a lot of supply out there on the short-term rental side, but people are doing really well. People are, now we have talked about this a lot. When you're looking at overall market statistics, we're not breaking down, you know, the top of the market, the middle of the market, the bottom of the market. Mm-hmm. So just let me say this. So we're starting to talk about the demand on the short-term rental side hitting record levels in 2025. Mm-hmm. They said that 141 million people visited Florida, over $133 billion spent in Florida alone in the tourism industry. In 2024, the 2025 numbers aren't even fully complete yet. So, they said it was about a 7% increase. That's a lot of money being spent by the consumer.
That's so much money.
So people are saying, hey, we like it. We like it here. There's a lot of different reasons. We like the weather. We like the beaches. We like the amusement parks. We like the environment down there, right? There's a lot of you know, a lot of things going well for Florida, particularly short-term rentals in Florida, which we really look at as an example for the rest of the country in a lot of cases when things are starting to happen, right? And shifts are happening. So we're not seeing much of a shift as far as demand. It's not in these numbers right now. One of the shifts we are seeing, though, is where that $133 billion is being spent and how it's divvied up. And we're seeing that there's this massive gap between the middle of the market and the top of the market. So we're not going to dive into how to be in the top of the market, but not everybody is created equal in any business. Short-term rentals are no different. And so if you're going to get in there, this is very positive signs for me as an investor, knowing that I've got demand on the back end for the product that I'm selling, right? Mm. So my product is going to be buying these properties, creating a unique experience, and then the consumer is renting the properties from me. So it helps me pay for these assets. Now, on the other side, what we're seeing is a massive influx of housing inventory. Right. Housing inventory coming on the market. Buyers, it's turning into a buyer's market. We've been in a decade-long seller's market. And all of a sudden, we're starting to say, hey, you know, that in this market, we're starting to see lots of homes hit the market. Buyers aren't jumping in yet. Rates haven't dropped a ton. And so a lot of people are still sitting on the sideline. And so as a buyer, you know, Warren Buffett, one of his famous quotes or a piece of advice was, be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful. This is your sign. So I'm telling you right now, this is your sign right now that there are opportunities out there and negotiations that you can go negotiate harder. You can push, you can get price reductions. There's a lot of different things that are pointing as a really good time to be considering buying in some of these markets. Because we're also seeing people are still spending money at record levels every single year. Mm. So you don't have an indication of that slowing down. So the only time I'd be really nervous is if I felt like my consumer on the back end that I need to pay for this property and to make some money with this property, I'd be a lot more concerned if I saw some contraction there from the consumer. We're not seeing that. We don't anticipate seeing that either. Mm. And so when you're looking at any sort of investment, you're looking at multiple different levels of the market. Mm-hmm. One, how much are people spending on what I'm going to be buying, right? And putting out on the market. Is that going up or down? And we're seeing record levels there. And then how much is it going to cost me to buy that, right? And we're seeing really good signs as a buyer that this might be a really good time to buy because lots of inventory, lots of choices, things that I can negotiate on, all these different things stack up in our favor. The beach isn't going anywhere. The amusement parks aren't going anywhere. People are still going to go to those areas.
Right.
And there's not the other thing that I didn't see in those statistics that I know is, and I don't know for specifically for Florida, but I know US wide is housing starts are down significantly. So they're not actually building anymore either. So the inventory is actually new construction is actually contracting a little bit. And so the builders are saying, hey, listen, we're kind of reading the tea leaves and saying we're seeing all this inventory starting to hit the market. Homes are sitting longer. Price reductions are happening. As a buyer, those are all good signs for me. However, it doesn't last forever. So we know this. Real estate is cyclical. So you have to say, hey, listen, I'm going to sit on the sideline for a certain period of time, but I want to take advantage of this right now. So in my opinion, now's a really good time to be buying and really good time to be stacking things up.
Okay.
We're talking specifically about Florida.
Yeah.
And so, you know, those are ways that we're going to start navigating just those numbers that we just shared.
Okay. Wow, that's really interesting. I'm like, my ears are perked up now. Okay,
yeah.
I like the contrarian. Like, I want to know the hardest part. So let's go into this. This is a great time for someone to go into Florida, right? All this. Let's talk about maybe some of the main challenges or advice for these people. You know, this is a lot of people there. So here we go. I got five of these biggest things that we need to look for that could be a challenge going into Florida. We got insurance, taxes, seasonality, increasing operating costs and risk. Yeah. Does that sound like a fair five, you think, or should we change maybe one of those?
Yeah, so you've got always have those, like any investment's risk, right? So we try to mitigate that with as much data as possible, but there's always an element of risk there. Mm-hmm. In Florida, insurance can be a big deal. Taxes are going to, you know, depending on, you know, DeSantis is talking about getting rid of property taxes, but that's not going to apply to us as investors. That's going to apply to homeowners in that area. So we still are going to have to deal with the taxes. Seasonality, obviously we're in the short-term rental game. Mm-hmm. We have peak seasons and off seasons. We have to navigate that. Those are all things that we talk about. And then increasing operating costs. If you're, you know, depending on, you know, energy costs and some of those things that are going up, operating costs really have to do with our variable expenses, our fixed expenses, all those different things that just cost to operate a business.
Right.
I don't know that that's going up significantly, in my opinion. I think it's just going up kind of as cost of everything starts to go up, we just navigate that into what we're doing. We are also seeing the back end revenue being able to cover those costs. So it just comes down to underwriting. It's like the first thing I'm looking at is what are the rules and the regulations. We talked about a little bit before this. We kind of took it out of the talking points because it's kind of an old talking point. But in 2022, 2023, there were sweeping regulations with HOAs and municipalities and everything else. Can I operate a short-term rental? Do the numbers work? Does the ratio between my acquisition cost and that's getting better? I'm able to negotiate a little bit better. Maybe I'm able to get some concessions. But does that, whatever it ends up being, does my acquisition cost versus the revenue I'm going to generate cover it, right? Is that ratio, is that ratio favorable or unfavorable? Is it an investable ratio for me? And then, and all these other things, insurances, taxes, operating costs, all those things, that's just, those are just numbers on my spreadsheet to say, does this work or not based on how much I'm paying for the property and how much I'm going to make for the property?
I mean, it seems like everybody always wants to know, like, what are the biggest things I need to look at, look out for, advice I should have known. And so when you hear these things about like the, these are the five biggest challenges going into that Florida market, do you feel like it, to me, as you're talking about these things, it kind of just seems like all, any market is going to have some kind of these. Insurance, if it's not hurricanes, it's wildfires. If it's not seasonality, you got fall or winter. Maybe you're a slow season, peak season. So it seems like they all have something
they're
like
all
that.
There. Yeah. So do you think these are just elements of the underwriting process?
Does Florida have literally anything that maybe like someone should really look out for? Does that make like
no? So I personally. Like I always get scared to death of hurricanes, right? But does it really, like you talk to somebody in Florida, they're like, it's hurricanes.
Yeah, that's part
like,
of
we
it.
We deal with it, right? On a regular basis. My insurance costs are going to be a lot higher in those areas. But no, it's not. Like the good thing about Florida is it's a major market. It is a very, like, it's a very mature market that the in mature markets, you know, they act with a lot of predictability for a lot of these different things. There's not a lot of unpredictable things happening in mature markets because the supply and demand is so large that you've got fairly predictable things that are happening that we can look at and say, good or bad. Like we know we're going to probably have a hurricane season every single year. Do we get, is it usually going to be a total wipe out of our house? No, the odds are in your favor it's not, right? And so we think that, right? But it's the odds are in your favor that that's not going to be a total loss type of a of an event for you on an annual basis. But you have hurricane season for a reason because they come through every year. And so those are just, like I said, when, you know, even though that might be an unpredictable event, if is it going to hit me or not hit me, you know it's coming. The houses are built for it. We have insurance for it, all those different things. We know that these are major profit drivers. You got 141 million people that visited Florida last year to go visit the amusement parks, the beaches, the cities, all those different fun things. It's a very predictable demand on the back end. Those are good things as an investor. We like predictability as an investor. It mitigates our risk, you know, by being able to predict some outcomes. And so when it comes to Florida, there's no different. Are we excited that the maybe the prices are coming down a little bit, there's more inventory? Well, if I'm a seller, that's not great. But we're buying long-term investments. That we're buying long-term investments for cash flow purposes, and we're buying them for long-term appreciation and tax advantages. Well, if I can buy it at a better rate than I could yesterday, you know, if prices are coming down a little bit and it's a little bit more affordable, it's a great thing as a buyer, right? I'm excited about that. And so it's always interesting to me that those are the times when buyers contract and they sit on the sidelines even longer. When if they were getting in this game for the long term, that's a really good time to be buying.
Okay, this is another thing that hit me as you were talking. I was curious on if someone may be listening, they may think, okay, well, there's so many people already there. So is it too saturated, or there's too many people up at the top already? So then as you're talking, I went over here to Airbnb and I'm just scrolling through listings and nothing is immediately, of course, taking me away. This is a very general search on just a Florida. So when someone may think that way, what would be your answer? You know, Sean, there's already so many people there. There's already so much. Is it going to be really hard for me to get my money at the top? You know, is it gonna be too difficult for me because there's so many other people?
So first of all, replace saturation with demand. Anytime you're complaining about saturated markets, that's an indication that there's a lot of consumers spending money there. Markets are saturated because there's money being spent. The second layer of that question, is it too hard for me? Maybe, maybe not. You have to decide. Is it easy to walk into the top of the market? No. Is it, are there things you can do to get in the top of these markets? Absolutely. And once you're there, it's way better and easier, in my opinion, to operate in the top than it is in the middle. The middle is messy. The middle is hard, and it's a grind all the time. And so is there things and are there things that you should be doing to operate toward the top of the market? Yeah. Is it easy? No, it's not easy. You have to roll up your sleeves. You have to be committed to a process. You have to have a blueprint and really a plan to operate in the top of the market. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be work to be done. There's going to be money to be spent to be getting into to set these properties up correctly. You're in the hospitality game. You're in the experience business. Homes in and of themselves usually are not in the experience, like selling an experience, right? Homes are built for a different purpose than really creating these crazy experiences in rare cases, right? And so, you can, it's easy to justify. So here's the thing. It's always easier to justify why I shouldn't do something than why I should. When I go speak in a crowd, sometimes I'll say, write down all the things that you don't want to happen, or you don't want, you know, write down all the things that are challenges for you in your life, or the things you're worried about happening. You know, it's too saturated. Maybe I don't make money, whatever. Write all the, all the things that are negative. Right. That list is this long. It's real easy. People can keep writing. I have to stop them. I have to say, okay, put your pens down, stop. Now, I want you to write down the things you want to happen. I want you to write down the things, the reasons you should be doing this. And people will write down two or three things, and then they're just sitting there waiting for me for the clock to stop. And you don't have to stop them. It's way easier for us to justify what's going to go wrong and identify what's going to go wrong than what's going to go right. And so that, you know, the question, and you ask the right question, is if when people are getting into this, like, are they too saturated? Is it going to be too hard for me to get in the top of the market? Is it going to be too hard for me to compete? Right? The answer to most of those questions, depending on your attitude, might be yes. So stay out. Right? And if it's,
because the people that go in are going to have a great time. It'll be a heyday. It'll be fantastic. For the people
and,
that want
to. And the people that are like, hey, listen, those numbers you just told me, that's pretty exciting. If I can get my unfair share of that $133 billion that was spent in the market, right? If I can figure out how to get an unfair share of that instead of my fair share, and I understand how to operate in the top of the market, and I'm even if I don't understand now, I can team up and get advice from people who do know how to do that. That's pretty exciting, because I want to figure out how to do that rather than sit here and talk myself into not doing anything.
Right.
This is, you know, when people talk about the economy, and I don't think I don't necessarily think it's a good thing. That gap between the haves and the have-nots just keeps widening. And if you keep talking about why you can't be a have instead of a have-not, you're just going to sit there forever. And it's going to get harder and harder and harder. It's always hard. It was never easy. It's not easy to go be the top of anything and the best at anything. And so the fact that people sell you an easy button or tell you you should only do things that are so easy, and we can talk about it in a minute, but that's why I think that the younger generation, why they are struggling a little bit, is because they want the easy button. You know, everything's been easy. Everything's been instant for them. And they think, hey, I just want the easy button. So, you know, we don't have to dive right
in. In a minute. I want to ask if this is actually like a fair, what I just did, and if this is actually a good criteria. So I went on Airbnb. I put in some dates right here. I chose the most, the top third of the most expensive homes. And I'm kind of just scrolling here. Now, is this like a fair thing? Now, I just typed in Florida, so I'm looking at all of them. Is this kind of fair to see, okay, these are the homes that are asking the most amount of money? And to me, would this be a fair judge to be like, wow, man, there's like no pops of color here. There's like no emotion. They all look the exact same. Is this kind of a fair thing to do if anyone's kind of having some of these like,
I don't know if I can do it.
Would this be a fair thing?
What we do, the hard part for somebody else is they don't really understand what we're talking about sometimes. Okay. Visually, it's hard to understand. We just hosted our boardroom HQ. This is what we were talking about. We had, how many people in that room had top properties in their market? And we even said, guys, you're still, you know, because just because you have a top property doesn't necessarily mean you're setting yourself up to really stand out in a crowd. And most of these top properties that you just scrolled through, many of them look, I mean, they look very similar. There's really nothing that is differentiating. When you can't differentiate yourself, eventually even if you're at the top right now, eventually you become a commodity because everybody starts to look the same.
Right.
And so it's a matter of being able to stand out, you know, personalize stuff, stand out, be unique, all those different things. And I've got to be able to stop a scroll. I've got to have a pattern interrupt with certain things. Mm-hmm. Right. And so we don't need to dive into an entire marketing lesson, but the point is, and I think the point that you really make right there, when I look at it, is the opportunity in the Florida markets, massive markets that you say might be too saturated. How can I stand out? Mm-hmm. I can instantly go tell somebody how to stand out in that market.
Right. 100%. 100%.
Now, you know that. That's why you asked that.
Yeah.
It's hard
if
you don't know what we're talking about and you don't visually see what we're talking about. We can, you know, because it's hard to really explain it which we tried to on the podcast many, many times, but sometimes you just have to see it, right?
You're 100% right on that. Okay. What about someone's asking you this question, Sean, you know, me and my family love Disney, but we also love the beach. Would you persuade someone to go more Disney or coastal? Or does that really even matter? No. Is it preference?
It doesn't matter.
Okay.
I usually lean, let's say they like both of them equally. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, then let's just see where we find the best opportunity. Right. According to all the things that we're seeing right now, we've got a lot of inventory starting to hit the market more than we've seen since 2008. That's a long dang time, right? That's a long time.
Yeah.
And so we're finally, and that's not,
it is a long time.
We needed to fact check me on this.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure. And I don't know I'm pretty sure that we have more inventory versus buyers than we did in 2008, maybe not total inventory. I don't know if total inventory has actually overtaken 2008. I think it's an indicator as much as there was buyers versus inventory.
Let's see here.
So, housing market shift to a buyer's market in 2025-6, with sellers outnumbering buyers by a record 44%. It's not experienced the same massive inventory glut. Yeah. See, you have to read into a lot of these headlines. So this is saying exactly what I was saying.
Okay.
It has shifted to a buyer's market with sellers outnumbering buyers by a record 44% in early 2026. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
That means we can negotiate, but it is not experiencing the same massive inventory glut that fueled the 2008 crash. So current inventory, while rising, is roughly one third of the 4 million homes for sale in 2008. Wow. So we're not, so we've always said real estate's, and that what that indicates is we're probably not going to see a massive crash. We're not going to see a massive decrease. It's giving us opportunities, but you're probably talking about 5 to 10%, you know, maybe 3 to 5 or 6% decrease in prices. Mm. You're not going to see 25, 30% decrease in prices, in my opinion, based on that stuff. And that's why it's important to, you have to look at lots of different numbers. The issue with a lot of buyers where they get scared to death and sit on the sidelines is they read a headline or two, and they don't really look into all of the things that we're talking about, right? Mm. Even the headline that we were talking about.
Yeah.
We haven't seen inventory like this since 2008. Well, we're a third of the inventory we had in 2008. So that is a little misleading, right?
Right.
And
that's why
I brought it up and said, let's fact check it, but let's look it up. And that's what I had been seeing as well, is the ratio between buyers and sellers is bigger than it's ever been, right? Mm-hmm. Or sellers to buyers. And so it's showing that it's a buyer's market. And we haven't seen those numbers since 2008. But we haven't seen the massive inventory that we saw. And I don't think we will.
All right. Give me one more long-term opinion here. You know, we pulled up some of these other headlines. Some people are like, HOAs are going to put more regulation. Do you think, give me another long-term opinion. Do you think, you know, prices may go down 3 to 6%? Do you think the tourism industry is going to tighten up? I know they have a new governor election coming up soon. I've seen a couple of their people that maybe are going to want to crack down and keep the money in Florida. Do you think there's going to be a lot of changes in the Florida market in the next 10 years?
No, I think Florida is one of the best run states.
Huh.
I think that we look at Florida a lot for how to operate successfully, frankly.
Mm,
I mean, DeSantis, I think, has done a phenomenal job. I think arguably he's the best governor we've had in the U.S. right now.
Whoa.
And I think that he has been an example for a lot of reasons, but economically, is what I'm speaking of. The, okay. You know, so like you've got, look how many businesses are moving to Florida. Mm-hmm. Look how much money, look how many homeowners are moving to Florida. Like they're a positive growth on almost every economic measure that you look at in Florida. Wow. They're also major markets though. So we can look at all this stuff. My overall outlook is very bullish in most of this, which is a little contrarian, because what has been very popular recently, because it's what sells on podcasts and sells on headlines and everything else, is to call the recession and call the crash and everything else. So everybody's always just talking about this massive disruption. And I just don't see it. I don't see the numbers that indicate it. They talk about a massive disruption in housing prices, a massive disruption in short-term rental demand going down. And they've been talking about it forever. Well, once in a while, they're going to be right. Be like, I told you so. Like what I talked about when we were talking about the Mexican cartel. I was kind of that guy.
Yeah.
Not kind of. I have been that guy about Mexico forever. It doesn't mean that I was always right. It means that once in a while, something's going to happen if you start seeing this stuff. When I read the tea leaves when it comes to the real estate markets, specifically the residential real estate markets and our short-term rental market, which I pay very, very close attention to both of those, I'm very bullish. And I do think we've got some good opportunities right now in some of these markets. But I think what everybody's waiting for and why they don't want to do anything is because they're reading all these other headlines like, well, you're going to get a 50% discount if you just hold off because the market bubble is about to burst. Well, show me anywhere that shows that. Mm-hmm. And so what's going to happen is you're going to sit there forever and do nothing.
Right.
And you're going to look and say, man, I wish I would have done something. Mm-hmm. I wish I would have taken a step forward. Or two, you like what happens if you're right? Are you going to do something when it drops? Because I promise you that most of those people that when things dropped and they didn't drop 50% in 2008, everybody talks like they did. Mm-hmm. On average, it was like a 23% drop across the country. I mean, it was over a 4-year slide, right? So you were losing 5 to 8 points a year, which is big. That's a big deal. It was a massive disruption to the housing market, but everybody's waiting for this, you know, this massive disruption and to say what? I was right. Or to keep moving forward. They've been literally talking about it people started talking about I remember specifically in 2015, 17, the housing market's going to burst. The bubble's going to burst. Dude, we're 11 years removed from that. You know, right before COVID, 2017 to 19, short-term rentals started gaining a lot of traction. And everybody's saying, oh, I don't know if this is going to last forever. And it was just barely starting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the housing experts or the talking heads have been calling a housing bubble burst for at least 10 years. And the numbers just don't show it.
Yeah.
So I'm not worried about that. Long term, I think that now's a great time to be buying. Long term, we're seeing that the consumer really likes short-term rentals.
Yeah.
They're willing to spend money on short-term rentals. And we don't see any signs of a contraction there.
Mm. Well, I wanted to pull up some of your statistics since you said Florida's growth here. Let's read it. Florida's economy has experienced robust growth over the past 5 years, significantly outpacing the national average by nearly double in real GDP growth from early 2019 to 2024. Yeah. Driven by high population migration, like you said, booming tourism, like you said, increased business formations, like you said, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So it's just been growing more and more. Yeah. So it's very exciting.
Yeah.
So it seems like a good market. There's going to have challenges.
Yeah, but how many headlines? Yeah, exactly. And I like that you brought this up as a topic today, because how many headlines are we seeing that say Florida's done? Is the golden age over? Do we need to pause on Florida?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if everybody wants to pause, it's great for all of us that don't want to pause.
Dude, that's fantastic. Yeah. All right, well, let's get a little opinion here. So we're 28 minutes in. We're about 30 minutes in. We can move into Gen Z, or we can highlight that for maybe next. We could do Gen Z being dumber and the housing crisis next week.
Well, since we only have a little bit of time, and I'm going to pick on Gen Z a little bit. Yeah, let's pick.
We got these things. We could talk about two just in case.
I don't know the answer to that question. AI, one of our, so it says, I'm curious what the technology is to have the lights turn on upon entering the door code. Also, how does the automation work to have the message on the TV? We go to these events, but you got to realize I'm not the tech guy. I know that I say I want this stuff to work, but I have somebody else do it. I actually don't know the AI tools, but where you put in your door code, the lights turn on, we automate it. I know that, I think it's,
There was a couple. There was
four, I think, is one of our is one of them. That's you have to have people set all that stuff up for you.
Yeah.
And so which you know when we do that, it's awesome, right? Yeah. But I don't set that stuff up. So I wish I had the answer to that question, but I actually don't have the answer to that question because I don't know the actual tools.
Fair. Okay. All right. Well, what are you thinking? You want to pick on Gen Z a little bit,
let's pick on them.
Let's pick on
them. You're sitting right across from me. Right in the middle of Gen Z.
Let's go for it. All right. Should we do the statistically dumber? Let's talk about it for just, let's go these three. These are three really fun little bullet points here. You ready? The average U.S. financial literacy score hovers around 48% to 52%. That is a failing grade. This is for Gen Z. Okay. Nearly 40% of adults would struggle to cover a $400 emergency expense without borrowing or selling something. That's so bad. Gen Z now uses credit cards more than millennials did at the same age, and they're less smart. Yeah, we have another one. Gen Z is the first generation to score lower on key cognitive measures, IQ, memory, and literacy than their parents. This is the first time ever, the reverse Flynn effect.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, man. This is so sad. This really is sad
because one, they're statistically dumber. And I say that like it's true, right? You're seeing it. They grew up with screens in their face. It's not their fault either. I mean, we need to blame their parents and say, hey guys, it was the first generation that literally was raised with all these screens and technology.
Yep.
They also grew up during COVID, this massive like failed experiment of how we indoctrinate and control people and tell them what they can do, what they can't do, that was in their school years, right? And then, in my opinion, a massive fall to the education system was during COVID,
man.
How they handled everything. And that generation was the effect of it.
Yeah.
And so you can't blame them. And so it sounds like we're coming down on them. They also focus on, it's like this generation of activists, and it's like, guys, first of all, maybe spend your time learning some of the stuff that unfortunately we failed to teach you when you were growing up.
Right.
Parents being, the parents and of these kids, the educators of these kids, the governments that decided to shut them down and put them behind masks and everything else. And I mean, all of these failed things that they had to grow up with. The narrative for them has been rewritten how many times?
Gosh.
We've been telling them forever that they can't do this, they can't do that, they have to do this way. I mean, and then we say, well, listen, in order, because I can't, I can't explain this, I'm going to give you a screen to just sit in front of nonstop. And so I feel like that they're, I mean, it's a recipe for disaster. And now we're realizing, whoops, screwed that up. So poor Gen Z is...
This is so sad, dude.
But it's true, right? I mean, you're looking at the stats. Yeah. You're going to see economic outputs and everything from this generation. There's going to be this big blip where it's going to drop. And I mean, they're spending, they're not making money like their generation before. That the Flynn effect that says each generation gets smarter and more productive. It's like this reverse. Every generation scored higher than the last. This trend reversed with Gen Z potentially scoring lower than millennials and Gen X. Cause researchers are pointing to the great rewiring, a significant shift toward digital, short form media, heavy smartphone use in schools, which disrupts the development of deep, complex neural pathways. This is a generation that literally grew up on instant gratification. Easy button. If it doesn't fix it, I'm going to throw a tantrum because I want it fixed now, right? And it's like you see this now with this age. What is the age? Like you said,
14 to 29.
14 to 29. Go look at the protests in the streets and see who's out there. Go look at the people that are like. It's like go do something besides just disrupting things, right?
And
is it their fault? I mean, at the end of the day, we all have to take responsibility. You are part of Gen Z.
Right.
Now you look in the mirror and say, we were probably failed, but are you going to live your entire life to say I was failed in this entire experiment of me growing up with the first generation with the smartphones in our face, the only generation that had to go through school during COVID? I mean, all of these things were massive failures, in my opinion. I think the way those things are handled were horrible.
They were so bad.
But you can't like at some point, they got to look in the mirror and say, listen, mm-hmm. I'm going to fix this. There's a massive opportunity in that generation to say, I'm going to do something a little bit different. Don't do a bunch of buy now, pay later stuff. Don't look for try to delay some gratification. Try to get financially literate. Try to go educate yourself at this stage on different things. Mm-hmm. Go look at the things from a different lens than what you grew up with, because the lens we put in front of this generation that they had to learn in their most formidable years was pathetic, to be honest.
So bad.
So
it's so bad.
I don't know
bad.
How this all ties into short-term rentals, but it's really sad.
Okay, there's like 3 points here. Okay, so activism outrage, you mentioned that. And I would say that's the only place where they really see value. They see it all the time on their phones. It's the first thing they see is if you stand for something, Republican, Democrat, this or that, you gotta make a stand in there, you can find some value because you're just a little speck of sand in this infinite.
Yeah, so they feel like that they add value.
They add value to themselves. Or impact. Yeah. Right. And they stand for something. Yeah. So there's that.
Okay.
Then this idea of the delaying gratification, or they just like are upset about things, is because they feel like maybe they don't have to fix it. There's literally people that are like, you know, we're going to give you free. You guys have to watch this episode to see. Well. We'll give you things to help you along the way. We'll give you this. And so they're like, okay, we'll play into it. But then this is, I think, where it really ties into short-term rentals here, is what does this mean for the people who are listening to this, your kids? Say, we had our Boardroom HQ just came up this past Friday. We had one of our members show mm-hmm. up with his 15-year-old son. He's a part of Gen Z.
Shout out to Blaine.
Exactly.
It was good to see him.
He was here. He was learning about short-term rentals. He was learning about design. He was learning about marketing. He was walking around talking to other adults that are high-income earners, investors. Like, so if you are a part of this, or you are one of these people, you could really help your child excel past so many of these other kids.
Well, you just have to be intentional about it,
yes.
Right? I mean, yes, he stands. Yes. Blaine is going to be like in a great position because mm-hmm. his dad and mom care. Like there are things that we can do for our kids, and mm-hmm. I think that, you know, Blaine's 15, my kids are 14. They're on the tail end of the Gen Z, right? And I do think that Gen Alpha and Gen Z, now we're looking at saying, hey, the front side of that group is, we kind of screwed them up, right? And hopefully we're saying that as adults, like saying, man. And now though, the issue is we can't go say, we're just going to fix it for you.
Right.
We have to take some responsibility, but we have to help them do it themselves. Right. Mm-hmm. Like you can't just go fix a problem. You have to say, let's go do this together. Like, right. Nobody will admit to screwing up ever. Everybody, there's this, you know, there's a confirmation bias that every decision I make is written in stone and I can't change my mind, which I think is crazy. Like,
right,
you know,
right.
Decisions there are things that I believed 15 years ago mm-hmm. that I don't believe today. And so it's okay to say, hey, I'm going to change my opinion or whatever, for whatever reason. We have a hard time doing that.
Right.
And
right.
So, first we should probably tell a lot of these kids, hey, listen, we kind of screwed this one up. Let's kind of figure this out together.
Right.
We know you like, cause they're, it's not a lack of intelligence when we say they're dumber statistically, mm-hmm. right? I'm talking about the IQ scores, the cognitive scores, all that stuff.
I'm with you.
It's not that they're dumb in like kids, right? It's like, they just,
right. No, I'll tell you, here's an example. I took economics in high school, right? You know in my economics class, instead of teaching us about economics, we watched the movie The Big Short three times.
Yeah.
We watched a movie in my class.
Yeah.
Right? That's public school education there. We weren't learning about like mortgage rates or FHA loan. We weren't learning about it. She wasn't teaching that. It was just like, hey, watch, you know, Ryan Gosling and Steve Carell in this movie talk about mm-hmm. something that goes on. So that was like, that's just what we were taught. And I remember kids on their phones just scrolling while we were supposed to be watching this movie. And like, that was my education. That's what I got.
Right.
So.
it's, I think it comes down to is just that instant gratification of the mm-hmm. phones, like that like instant 100%. Dopamine hit is super addictive. It's really sad. And now I don't want to spend the time to do any long form research mm-hmm. and dive into something for, you know, learn something or have any delayed gratification. Investments mm-hmm. specifically, let's talk about like financial literacy, financial, you know, it's like they're way more likely to jump on, you know, Polymarket or throw something in crypto or throw something in these quick hit type of investments than they are to buy a piece of real estate that's going to be a 5-10 year
100%
type of an investment.
Tons and tons. Yeah.
And so so those markets are growing like crazy and they're like, yeah, I'm investing in the crypto or day trading. I mean, how many of them, if they're going to do stocks, it's not even really long-term stock investing. They're day trading. Right.
And
they have the ability to affect these markets. The issue is their earning power has been dropping. Mm. And so their wages aren't keeping up with the cost of living. And still staying with mom and dad, living in their houses, not buying houses. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we need to rewire the way that we say, hey, listen, traditionally, this might be a better option. Like diving into something for the long term might be a good thing.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a good mix of it. Learn how to use the technology, understand all of those different things. I mean, there's going to be an entire shift when AI comes.
Right.
And does that group latch on to becoming the pioneers for that and understand how to use it, how to implement it? Maybe not. Right now they're showing signs that they can't focus on anything for more than 5 minutes.
I know.
And so their brains have been wired that way, really sadly, right?
That's so bad, man.
Yeah.
That's so bad.
That's not long-term success
right.
when you're moving around that much and you have to have that much going on all the time. Mm-hmm. That's not focused energy onto something for a longer period of time.
Right. All right. Let's end
again. My opinion shouldn't probably go on that big of a rant, just my opinions on short-term rentals and the housing market. You're usually way better than those types of opinions.
This is great. Let's end on this on how, okay, someone may be listening to this. They're a short-term rental investor. They have a kid that's a Gen Z, 14 to 29. They go, man, I want to save them. What's like a one easy step they could start to getting their kids involved? Should they start with underwriting? Should they help them with some of the communication, if they're self-managing? What's a way to kind of get them into this?
Yeah. So one, on the flip side of this, you've heard me say this a lot. My favorite part about short-term rentals is that families get involved together, right? And so when we start diving into short-term rentals, like when I saw Blaine show up at our boardroom HQ, I love it. Like I love when I see the younger generation getting involved in this because it shows some initiative to kind of break the mold.
Right.
And we're kind of really hammering on the mold. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean you can't get out of the mold. That doesn't mean you can't be, you know, forge your own way and get into this stuff. The reason I love short-term rentals is there's so many ways to understand investing, running numbers with underwriting, understand customer experience, sales, all of these different things, business in and of itself of hey, listen, here's a product. Here's what the consumer demand is. How are we going to deliver that? All of those different things are great. And I think every person's a little different. And so I wouldn't say put them into the management side or the communication side. Some kids are going to love running the numbers. They're going to love analyzing markets. And if they understand how to do that, the reason short-term rentals are fun, and I've found that families and kids particularly get invested into them and interested in them, is because they relate to them, right? It's vacations. It's fun. It's something that they're interested in. I've been investing in real estate for 26 years. I've never seen kids show up to analyze a development deal, right? Or an apartment complex or some of those things. They're means to an end. They're a little boring in and of themselves, if you will, to a kid. A vacation home is not that boring to a kid. They're interested in it. And they're like, this is kind of fun.
Yeah.
This is kind of cool. Oh, there's money to be made here. Oh, how do you do this? How do you do that? So because the interest is there on the front end of it just being a vacation home, all of a sudden their interest will start to peel back multiple layers of that onion and they can, you know, the financial literacy goes up.
Wow.
Business acumen goes up. Customer, you know, like customer service, like understanding, you know, consumer behavior and having to communicate as a customer service person.
Mm.
And so these things that they just don't get really taught in school.
Mm-hmm.
Short-term rentals, the aspect of a short-term rental business has so many different layers that they can get interested in. Mm-hmm. But on the surface, they're just interested in the very beginning because it's a vacation home.
Right.
Right.
No, 100%.
And so just being involved in it and having the opportunity opens to say, because this stuff is not rocket science. You know, like Blaine was here, he was 15 years old. My kid's 14 years old. They've underwritten many homes before.
Right.
They understand the detailed underwriting process.
Mm.
And then, you know, we were talking about design and marketing. on Friday, Blaine's getting into it. And Ed was telling me, he's like, man, Blaine's looking at our listing. He's giving me advice. Like, I had to tell him, I'm like, hey, listen, look, like, we're trying to do it all, but you know, like, we're like,
right.
Like, he's like, we need to do this. We need to do that. But they get interested. Let him be interested. Mm. Let him make suggestions. And short-term rentals are a fun place to do it.
Wow. I mean, you hit two great points. The age aspect of it, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, whatever age it is, whatever you know your child the best. But then also, like, they may be able to see something that you're just not seeing. Maybe Blaine told, you know, Ed, hey, maybe you should do this. And Ed was like, I never even thought of that.
Right.
But because he's here, it adds another layer to it. So that's some very exciting news. Yep. But all right, that's all we had today. We touched on some good stuff, man.
Yeah, hit a lot of stuff.
Hit a lot of good stuff there.
Love it. Love it. Awesome, guys. Well, listen, we'll wrap it up. We always appreciate you spending your time with us. We know it's valuable. We appreciate that. At the end of these episodes, I ask you two favors. One, if you got any value out of this show, share it with somebody that you think might like it as well. Those things help us. We don't run ads or sponsorships. And so when you guys share the show, that's how the show grows. If you don't have anybody to share it directly with, if you have more than 30 seconds, like it or review it on whatever platform you're watching or listening on, and that algorithm will go out and find other people just like you. And the final, most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today to start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Cheers.
Cheers, buddy.
Joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.